The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor May, good afternoon. We're on Man in Line, open line through till one today. Well, this rollout of the 20 mile per hour zones rolls on. One of the Onken MHKs, Rob Callister, says it's a political train crash. The minister in charge, Michelle Haywood, seems confident about its implementation. But I just wonder what you think. Apparently, all local authorities will be consulted over this, so we'll see how it pans out. And of course, Timwell's on at the moment, so we'll be keeping an eye on that just as it progresses through the day. David's first with us today. Hi, David.
Hi, Randy. I just want to correct something that was on a statement on Manx Radio today about the Onken Library being renamed. The library is not getting renamed to anybody else's name but Harvey Briggs. Harvey was a great gentleman years ago, supported the village and the library, and we honoured him some years ago by naming the library after him,
right,
like we did in the Liverson Stadium. I think the reporter from X Radio just done something else in there, and I've had loads of calls from people ringing me up and saying, what are you doing with Harvey's name? I said, we're not doing anything with it at all. When I investigated a little bit more, I think the reporters read something and added 2 and 2 and got 94. So just to tell people out there who have rang me and left messages on my phone to say, we're not changing the library over to anything to do with Derek Crellin. He's getting a civic pasty and some sandwiches, and that's about it. And it's also, before I forget, is the police station was named after him. I wasn't there at the time, and that happened. But I wanted to get on to the DOI minister.
Yeah.
And, you know, is she learning, or are the department learning the lessons to consult with people? They have to consult with people who are involved in issues. We're the local authority representatives. I'm speaking on my behalf now, not on it as the board or anybody else. My particular view on it all the time is they need to consult all the time. She didn't. And now I have to praise Rob Collister on MHK for Onken for persevering with this and making sure that consultation is going to happen. And because we don't know where things are going to be, what their views are or our views are. And quite rightly, she said a little statement, I think it was yesterday or could have been today or whatever like that is. The people who live in the area drive in the area, don't we? We know the concerns, we know things to avoid. In Onken itself, if you knew anything about Onken, would be Birch Hill is still a 20-mile-an-hour zone, so is Ballacurry. And round the schools, the only one that's probably not covered is by the Big Bemig School on that, which I have views on, and I've consulted on that as well. But I just wonder, what are we getting out of the DOI at the minute? Why are the members in that department are not saying to the minister, Minister, we're not consulting with the people who we represent and the local authorities who act as another representation there?
You see, the public, David, the public may think that local politicians, commissioners and councillors talk to central government all the time and vice versa. So are they misled by that? I mean, don't commissioners and councillors talk to central government? Don't they liaise with them?
We haven't been, my opinion, this is only my opinion. I've seen some all things that have happened since I got back in there. The communication lines are fairly dead. The saddest thing ever, we used to get, the local authority used to get communications regarding somebody's putting a zone up there for a disabled park or stuff like that. Only minor things, but could affect the street you know, and then we would look at it and say, and have a view on it. That's not getting done. Our communication that I see at the minute with the DOI regarding roads, pavements, potholes, and the biggest one is, Andy, and I go on all about it at the time, I might go to Table Hill, I'm thinking of getting my suit pressed ready to go, is to do a consultation on heavy vehicles, camper vans, and the local authority some time ago, and Derek Crellin was involved in this, we put a motion down to have an 18-24 zone near the park in Onken, near the tennis courts there, where we've got seven vehicles now, and the horse box keeps appearing. There's definitely no horse in it because I keep checking all the time, and I'll be checking it tonight on Wednesday night when I go to Bowles down there. And these camper vans are taking up at least two spaces where the car could sit.
Yeah,
they're huge things. In fact, the horse box, when it's on the Belgravia roadside now, is actually cutting into the trees which are overhanging the park. And we wanted it done. We consulted on it and consulted the neighbours. They wanted it done as well. And then the minister, and I was speaking out of turn, directly said it's not going to happen. But who is she to tell us as a local authority who represent the community what we can't and cannot do?
And not only but Onken Park is a tourist facility. It's not just for people. I mean, lots of people go to Onken Park. I mean, there's Mr. Kinley's restaurant there, and also the new paddleball thing that's going to be happening as well. So it's for people. It's for people to enjoy. So it's. I mean, while it is a residential area, it's an amenity.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, and it's a big amenity. I was listening to them today about the swimming pool rate, but that's for another day on there. But my concern is, A, she's not learning the lessons. B, the members in there are not telling her, we used to do it this way. We need to consult more. And what are the officers doing? We had that consulting thing about heavy goods vehicles. Where are we at that? Is it still in the bin? Is it lying on the shelf? Why is it resurrected? I wish one of the politicians, I might ask Rob, I might give him a ring when he's finished, Tim will just say to him, look, this needs to be brought back, and say these heavy goods vehicles who are parked in areas which are so small, streets blocking out people's daylight.
But also, David, I thought it was emergent. There has to be access for emergency vehicles. You know, if there's a fire and a fire tender can't get through, surely that's breaking the law. There has to be access for emergency vehicles.
Yeah, and they used to come out, the fire brigade itself, but they're probably busy enough, but at the end of the day, they used to sometimes just go out on a trip where they had concerns about housing estates. I know there's one in Williston, nothing to do with me, but I used to live in Williston there now, and I see all the issues of their big, heavy commercial vehicles parking. And the good news is now, Andy, you know, your newsroom hasn't been on yet about this, but the new municipal chairman, Vivian, has now handed over the mantle and the chain and all the bits and pieces and the books and stuff like that to Peter Washington from Douglas Council.
Oh, really?
So I do hope. Yep, it's all been handed over. It was done on Monday night where I met a load of people who are local authority members I've never met before. And said to me at the bar, we're only having soft drinks, I don't drink anymore. And said to me, it's great the municipal exists. It's great the municipal's going to do things for the future. And we're going to make, as far as I'm concerned, as a local authority member anyway, make this government accountable to the communities through the local authorities when they want things done. Why can't they do some business off island and create some wealth for the island, instead of messing about in things that we should be doing?
Okay. All right. Thanks, David.
See you, boy.
Cheers now. Overgrown greenery, says Dave in Ramsey. Overgrown greenery. You were talking about that yesterday. I was on a double-decker double-decker bus yesterday going from Ramsey to Douglas. I honestly thought the trees were going to come through the window. I got up and moved away from forward-facing windows because I thought it was going to... Whereabouts was that, Dave? And if you've been on a bus lately, upstairs, of course, have you been thwacked by any greenery lately? If so, where so? Another thing the government is doing to anger the general public, why not put the 20-mile-per-hour signs on hold and use that money for Craigneish or the family library? Just an opinion, says Nick. Well, one's in the budget, in the same department, but the other one isn't. But we take your point, Nick. Some things do really excite comment, and certainly the Craigneish bus route, and certainly the family library, which I'll come to more later on. We took an 80-year-old relative to the airport on Sunday. Absolute chaos, says Justin. We were there 2 hours before her Dublin flight takeoff time. Remember, this is an 80-year-old. The check-in queues filled the space. It was made up of passengers for three flights instead of having a queue for each flight. People weren't prioritised. They had to push through in hot, packed chaos. 80-year-old. Finally, 2 hours later, she had to run or miss her flight. She and others will never come back to the Isle of Man. They don't understand the excuses. They don't care about the reason. They just know we couldn't sort it. A member of staff said they were waiting for an engineer to fly from the UK to fix the tech. Surely there should be a transport minister for the airport and transport, says Justin. It's filed under customer care. We may know the reasons. Michelle Haywood may say it wasn't foreseen. They were turning it off and turning it back on again, and it didn't start. But that's an 80-year-old person flying to Dublin, and their memory of the Isle of Man is chaos. How much is the library short? Says this correspondent. At the moment, I think it's £100,000 they're short. But I'm having to say that there is something happening in the background at the family library. So I don't want to raise anybody's expectations. But the family, remember, it's a mobile library. It's not just the family library in Douglas. The mobile library goes out here, there and everywhere. And they do lots and lots of events there. I'm working in the square in Laxey at the moment. There's been several trams full this morning with mostly older people getting off them to walk up to the Mines Tavern. And then they realise how far the wheel is, so they just turn round and get on the next tram back. Surely somebody could put a shuttle bus on through the summer from the tram stop up to the wheel. They did years ago. Howard's with us now. Hello, Howard.
Oh, hi, Andy. Yes, it was, as I say, Henry Mitchell. They had the shuttle buses there, as I said the other day, from the promenade up to... Brown's Cafe, or that to the wheel. I think he was charging something like 50 pence. And that was backs and forwards all day long. And he made his quiet living out of it. But that is what you call using your head. And he was a businessman. The DOI, or the Heritage people, they've got an item there. They don't consider it. It's an asset, not a business item. So they're not particularly bothered about it. But just one chap that was just on a few seconds ago saying about the branches on the trees.
Yeah.
I can remember, you may remember, but the out-of-town buses, there's not many trees in Douglas for that, but they had an old double-decker bus with the front of the roof cut off, and they could go up to the height of the trees with that double-decker bus, obviously, and cut the branches down that were likely to damage the buses on the way through.
When was that?
That was long since gone. And the men used to work on the top deck.
Right. When was that, Howard?
When? Well, yeah. I'm not sure. It was when the red buses, so it was quite a while ago.
Yeah.
But having said that, it was an effective piece of equipment. And it was in-house, and they could go to wherever they want. They didn't have to ring up and arrange for a contractor to come in, cut a couple of branches down. They could say, OK, we've got an area here where the buses are getting partially damaged because they've got these tubes on the sides of the roof of the bus supposed to deflect branches. But this bus was going around years before they had all these deflectors, and you know, it was an effective piece of equipment sitting in the garage, and they could get it out any time they wanted, not just wait for a contractor to come along.
Well, I just wonder why. I mean, why would that happen? Surely all the bus drivers must have to report if they're getting hit by branches. It's not complicated, is it?
No, but it means doing something. And doing something is not the word for today. Doing nothing is the word. And sit back and just wonder why it's happening and put a report in and an email or something like that, which will be ignored. And it'll go into the out bin, never to be seen again. And this is what's happening with the civil service. They've got that many people sitting around on desks. And if a tree jumped out and bit them, they wouldn't know what the hell it was. But that's not what I come on for. It's just to say it was a simple piece of thing where an obsolete bus, as they were, still workable order, the top cut off it, and these lads used to go up the stairs in the bus, work off a safe platform, and they could cut all along the side, anything that was going to reach the height of the bus. And that was done away with when they went to the bus van or whatever it was. And, you know, then nowadays they'll get somebody along with a cherry picker, shut the road for a couple of days and everything, whereas a bus could go along and move along all the time and just work and get the job done.
Yeah, okay.
But what I was listening to, and Michelle Hayward, she's not been a minister for very long. And she's even less time as a minister of the DOI. And I was thinking this morning, she's picked this thing up on the 20-mile-an-hour limit very rapidly. And all the bits and pieces, the signs seem to be ordered, the plans are drawn, the access routes are this and that and the other, and the supposedly consultation with the various commissions around the island is supposed to be happening. This must have been well planned ahead. And Michelle Hayward, she's been led by the nose on this, and somewhere within the DOI, the hierarchy, and the civil service, this was pre-planned. And it strikes us that they couldn't get their way reducing the overall speed limit on the island. They're doing it here now through the back door. And people are going to complain and say, OK, well, we put it back up to 30 mile an hour, another £500,000 for signs. But are these signs that are supposedly ordered, are they being made on island? Is there any local input into it? Or is it a case of we'll get these made across and somebody will come over and fit them? The signs themselves, there was a quote of something like £130,000. That's only a starter. So who is going to fit them? What's the cost of fitting them? And how are they going to enforce this 20-mile-an-hour limit? Because in a lot of places around the island, Anika, Farm Hill and all them are all 20-mile-an-hour limits. Yeah. And they're coming up through the area. Well, it's like Formula One.
And that's the point, Howard, that there's absolutely no point in having a rule and having legislation if you're not going to enforce it. So
exactly.
How are they going to enforce it? They're not going to surely, I'm sure that the chief constable won't, be putting out constables with speed guns to book people. So are they going to bring in speed cameras? And the other thing is, in built-up areas, it's going to be quite difficult for any speed cameras to catch somebody's number plate, because they're weaving in and out of traffic half the time. So,
well, that's another thing with the number plates. I was in a motor store last year, and a chap was getting a new plate made up, and it wasn't with the numbers, the letters, each one was hyphenated. And that was how they were on the island. And if you didn't have that hyphen, it was stipulated in the rules that you had to have the numbers and letters separated by hyphen. But he said, nah, they've done away with that now. They don't need it. And this is why you're seeing a lot of cars, vehicles going around with fancy number plates where they do not have your regular space between the numbers and letters. And this is going to be more and more difficult if they do introduce the cameras, automatic number plate.
I'd never thought of that, Howard. What would an AMPR camera make of the hyphen?
Well, this is, there's no hyphen in the UK registrations, but technology can be made to recognise it. And, you know, that hyphen was there, but it's been removed now, and you will see an awful lot of cars going around. The older cars, yes, mine's got the hyphens in it, but a lot of the modern cars, and they'll slide the number. I saw one the other day, it spelt the girl's name. And that was on the rear plate when I was following her.
Mm.
And there's an awful lot of these which are illegal because they're not correct spacing. But that aside, as I say, the 20-mile-an-hour limit, it has, how are they going to enforce it? Because the police do not have the numbers to enforce this virtually all over the island.
And that's the point, Howard. If you have a law and you're not prepared to enforce it, what's the point of the law?
Exactly. And that's what makes me think. It's somebody sitting at an office desk, either in the DOI, in the government office, or this is pre-planned, and they say in themselves, this is to encourage active travel. So somewhere within the government, there's a blob in there that's got this active travel high up on the agenda, and the motorist is going to suffer.
Okay.
So, you know,
who's
doing it, and has Michelle been led by the nose to deliver it?
All right, Howard, thanks for calling.
Take care. Bye now.
27 minutes past 12. Last April, says Kate in Ramsey, I was on the top deck of the number 3 bus to Ramsey along Glen Crutchery Road when a branch of tree broke through the window, front left, where I was sitting. I was showered with glass. Shopping ruined, long story short. The bus's insurance paid me for the ruined items, but the man from Bus Vannin said to me that it happens all the time. They wait until a few tree limbs need lopping before going out there to effect repairs. Thank you, Kate. The best part about the 20 mile per hour signs in Port St Mary is that the signs start at the end of Gansey, where there are so many parked vehicles the speed's self-controlled. By the time drivers get to the crossroads and go straight on past the school, where it's impossible to go fast due to parked cars, to Craigneish, they accelerate round the bend at Dewans and then up the hill. This part of the road is both narrow and has no pavement and is used continuously by walkers. This would benefit from a 20 mile per hour sign. The rest is self-governing, says Teresa in Port St Mary. And Mary in Ramsey said the DOI probably bought the signs from the Welsh government as they're fast overturning their 20 mile per hour limits. Maybe we won't be able to read them because they'll be in Welsh. Eddie's with us now. Hi, Eddie.
Hiya, mate. You all right?
Very well. What a nice day it is.
Absolutely gorgeous. Gorgeous. Brilliant up here, staying. I totally agree with David that was on first about public consultations. Yep, absolutely, totally agree.
Yep.
Common sense, of course. I also totally agree with Howard then. I mean, why get rid of that bus that used to keep that trimmed? It's going out to contractors all the time now, costing an absolute fortune, probably. Again, a bit of common sense. I think I came on Tuesday just after I got back from Scotland, but I was on dead late, so I didn't get a chance to say much. While I was away, I did a little exercise of counting how many. Not particularly, but if I could observe, I did. We observed out of 286 wind turbines, 94 not working, and some of them were right alongside others that were flying round, so God knows what the excuse is. I've had lots of phone calls since I come back about what I said on Tuesday, which was that I know Mr. Wannenberg has been thrown in at the deep end and all about the wind turbines. But I would love to have got an answer about whether the radar is going to have to be updated or not, you know, because that is going to double the figure immediately that he's come up with. Started at 23, then 40, that would make it 80 to 100 nearly. And also, another, just throw another spoke in. I've had it on good authority from somebody who worked for the Highway Board for years that the airport road itself is built on a bog. And the construction of it was old gorse bushes with boulders, rocks and everything to just build it up on top of that. And he also told me this, if I were on good authority, used to work there, that there's an unofficial weight limit on the airport road.
Really?
Now, so I've heard. I'd like Mr. Wannenberg to come and tell me whether this is true or not, any of these things, because when all said and done, it's taxpayers' money. And up to now, if these things are true, I've got this thing up to well over 100 million. And then they're pumping around figures of 23 and 40.
All right. Well, we'll try and find out whether or not there is an official limit on the airport. I'd not heard that before.
He didn't say official. He said an unofficial limit, simply because of the way it was constructed.
Right.
So everybody who is, say, for instance, JCK, if they're doing heavy loads, they have to let the authorities know that they're going to take such a weight. You know, I can remember there was a particular crusher that was brought up to the quarry up at Airystain. And I think it weighed over 50 tons, this thing, including the low loader and the wagon and everything. And they came not along the airport road, but up Ballymoda to miss that particular
right.
section.
Okay.
You know, so maybe we need some the other thing, like the consultancy, nobody's ever been round to my house to ask me what my opinions are up here. It's farcical.
Okay. All right.
All right, mate.
We appreciate it. Thanks for calling today.
Yep, bye.
27 minutes before one it is, and Charles with us. It was Charles God. Hi, Charles.
Hello, Andy. How are you?
Oh, my word. What happened at the weekend?
Well, I just wanted to perhaps make a helpful suggestion, actually, because on Sunday evening I was flying to Liverpool on the 5:30 flight, and I checked in at Rollsway at 4:10, and when I went upstairs, there was a queue. And the queue was from where you touch your barcode to go into the first part of security, right across the whole of the top floor, way beyond the Oasis Cafe, where there was a large crowd of people waiting to join the queue. The situation was that one of the X-ray machines had gone down. And I have to say the atmosphere amongst the public was very relaxed, very good-natured. Nobody was being rude or abusive. And the staff were very, very helpful. But the issue came when we were, not given any information. Now, I know this is very difficult, but there's a couple of things surely they could do. We queued for about an hour and a half, moving at 2 and 3 feet at a time. Everybody was worried, is our flight going? Has it gone without us? Are they delaying? And there's a young lad with a lanyard on who was obviously airport staff. He came up occasionally and made an announcement. But, you know, he's not a Shakespearean actor. He was shouting at the top of his voice, but literally only 30 people could hear him. And most of the other people weren't even aware he was there. And I was thinking, well, look, we've got a public address system here. Has nobody thought to give the man a radio mic, which he can use in an emergency like this, so we can hear what he's saying? That surely can't be outside the technical ability of the airport. And every now and then we heard ding dong, and obviously someone from the departure gate was making announcements, all of which were totally inaudible. Nobody could hear anything. And I can't believe that no one, after close of business at night, hasn't gone round and said, look, we can't hear what these people are saying. Can we turn the volume up, or can we train them for using the microphones? You know, people were getting stressed. The gentleman next to me had a walking stick. He had an appointment to have his knee operation the next day. He didn't know whether the flight was going or not. Information was very, very sketchy, and what did come up, you couldn't hear. And eventually I did get to the start of the security section and walked into the next room, and there's another 70 people standing there. I went on the airport website. It said that my flight at 5:30 would be leaving on time, and this was a 5:45, so it wasn't leaving on time. Nobody bothered to upgrade the website. And then the electronic board said, boarding for Liverpool. Well, there were still 70 people in front of me. So I had to push down to the front of the queue to speak to this gentleman. And he said, oh, right, okay. So he started shouting, anyone going for Liverpool, come forward now. Whether he was going to do that or not, I don't know. But, you know, it's just a matter of passing information over. Surely a radio mic and some simple communications would have helped. I will, on air, offer to buy him a battery-powered loud hailer, if that would help.
You just think, Charles, in the 21st century, a little joined-up thinking surely would be welcome.
Yes. And Andy, this isn't Gatwick with 10,000 people in chaos. This is a small airport. There were 200 people in the queue and five flights. Someone in the airport must have known what was happening. If they'd have told this poor man, who was doing his best, everybody was doing their best, he could have informed us, but they need to give him a microphone so we can hear him. It's a simple thing like that would have made everybody a lot more, you know, relaxed. And when we got eventually into the X-ray, you know, they were working their backsides off. They were really trying to get us through. Everyone was very helpful. It's not their fault that the thing had happened. But they rehearse, you know, tragic accidents outside. All the emergency services do these rehearsals. Do they ever rehearse for something like this in the airport, where somebody tells this man what's happening and he can convey it to us? So that's all I'm saying, and I hope someone maybe could look into that so that if it ever happens again, we know what's happening.
Okay, appreciate it, Charles. Thanks for calling today.
Thank you, then. Bye.
Take care. 23 minutes before one.
Oh, hello. My name's Ange, and I'm just ringing to endorse everything that the lady has just spoken about with regard to the closure of the family library. They do indeed do a tremendous service, or offer a tremendous service. And I was just thinking, why doesn't Manx Radio do some kind of interview program with the people on there to raise awareness, a greater awareness amongst our population? Because it is really, really important. And I suspect that they've just run out of funding, because they were given some, weren't they, for a period of time. Maybe that's the reason. But once it's gone, it's gone. Thank you. Bye-bye. Office World, have we got it?
Office World, yes, we have. Office World. For all things stationery, from pens, pencils, paper and ink cartridges to desking and seating, Office World has it. Call 666-366. Come down to Spring Valley Industrial Estate, Braddon, to find out more of what's in store. Office World, have we got it? Office World,
yes, we have. Office World. Hi Liz, I see you've had your garage converted.
We're desperate for more room.
Yes, come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450500. That's 450500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions.
Looking for a dementia care home? Summer Hillview is a brand new purpose-built care home, providing fabulous accommodation and excellent EMI nursing care. With bespoke care plans and registered nurses on hand, delivering round-the-clock care alongside a fully trained care team. There's a daily activity schedule for a full and active life, and the care home is fully accessible to loved ones, friends and family. For information, call 777-077. Summer Hillview, putting you at the centre of your care.
Get ready for a night of unforgettable hits. The iconic Level 42 are bringing their legendary sound to the Villa Marina this TT on Friday, 6th of June. Back, it's so bizarre, it runs in the family. Grab your tickets today at villagaiety.com or by calling 600-555. Level 42, Friday, 6th of June, live at the Villa Marina.
TT
2025 is almost here, and Manx Radio Motorsport will be on the air to bring you every moment of the action.
We have a new greatest of all time, Michael Dunlop, 27 TT wins.
Track days and race commentary, interviews with all the top riders, along with the latest weather and travel updates. We'll also bring you the pre-TT practice and race sessions at the Valan Circuit.
Listen at motorsport.manxradio.com, our smartphone app, DAB and AM 1368.
It all starts this coming Friday at 5 o'clock with our pre-TT coverage getting underway from 6.
Manx Radio Motorsport, the best biking station in the world. Brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance.
The Man in Line with Andy Witt.
19 minutes before one. Adam's with us now. Thanks for hanging on, Adam.
Thanks, Andy. How are you today?
Very well, thank you.
That's good. I'll just ring up, Andy. Down there on Central Promenade, where Spectrum Apartments are, at the northern end of Spectrum Apartments, there's a load. There's outside Spectrum Apartments is some of the most beautiful landscaping on the promenade, in my opinion. The planting, they really did get it spot on with all sorts of flowering shrubs, CBC, anthus, all that sort of thing, and Manx palm trees. And they made it look really beautiful. It looks a million times better now than it did when it was the venue in the Crescent Arcade, although it is a shame Douglas doesn't have an arcade, amusement arcade anymore. At the northern end of the Spectrum Apartments, there's a load of bushes, all of different lengths, which is good for bird life. And it's down there, there's a chorus, there's a plethora of tweeting birds down there, all singing along, and they all sound really beautiful. And if you stand there and listen to it, it's like being in the tropics. It really is absolutely lovely. And they've got next door, between the Castlemere Apartments and the Spectrum Apartments, there's a little pond in the garden at the front there next to where all the shrubs are. And it's got yellow irises growing in the pond. And that's just perfect for the birds as well, because they've got somewhere to drink and somewhere to bathe. And I just think it's smashing down there, the way the place has improved so much, the way the whole environment's been dragged up by the doing of the Spectrum Apartments and the outside of it. And I was thinking, like, you know, we need some more flowering shrubs like this in Douglas. And I was thinking, where the promenade lawns taper out opposite the Rutland Hotel, and they taper out, and there's now some bike rack things there which you can tie your bike up to. Why don't they extend that? When they do the walkway, why don't they extend it so there's a green strip right the way along Central and Queen's Promenades? You know, a green strip at the side of the walkway, just the edge, only about as wide as the pavement, and just have all lovely Manx palm trees and flowering shrubs, hibiscus, hydrangea, bottle brush plant, and you could have all daylilies and ginger lilies and Montbretia, and you could make it look really beautiful. You know, you could have it really beautiful, semi-exotic, and it could be and you'd get all the bird life coming in there, and you'd hear all the birds chirping away, and it would just improve the atmosphere at the promenade so much and create a green barrier between the walkway and the roadway. And I just, why don't they do that? What do you think of that idea, Andy? Do you think
we'll put that, I mean, this coming Friday, David Cretney, Douglas City Council, is on. And a week on Thursday, a week tomorrow, the leader of Douglas City Council, Devon Watson, will be on. So I know Devon's anxious for some new and fresh ideas for Douglas City Council. So, you know, the beautification of Douglas, I'm sure, will be uppermost in there.
Oh, yes. Well, Devon is very focused on housing, Andy. You know, Devon is very much of the socialist nature, and he's very much into sort of things that can be done to improve the town's housing stock and that sort of thing. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's not the
socialism
focused.
Can be beautiful as well, Adam.
Oh, well, it can be, Andy. No doubt that social democracy can be beautiful anyway, Andy. I'm not sure about socialism. But you know, you need someone who's focused on the gardens and the beautification of the gardens. And I know Phil Gorning, I think he's chair of the Gardens and Parks Committee on the council, and he's of the Green Party, you know, so he's very much in favour of wildlife flowers and things.
Good.
So it's getting the right people in the right places to do these things, Andy. It's not easy.
Well, they were out planting yesterday. I was actually sitting in one of the gardens drinking a bottle of pop yesterday as the boys were putting the plants out. It looked very nice.
Was that on Queen's Promenade or Lock Promenade, Andy?
Lock Promenade, just by Tower House.
Oh, lovely. Oh, well, I'm glad to hear they're getting them in there. I just hope they survive TT on ski.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, Andy.
Okay. And let's bring on Robert now. Robert, hello.
Hi. Two things. Yeah. Keir Starmer and 20-mile-an-hour speed limit.
Yes.
I'll take the 20-mile-an-hour speed limit first. I'm quite happy it went through, if it has gone through. Is that correct?
Well, they're talking about implementation of it now, Robert.
Okay. Well, I'm quite happy it went through because, you know, I just think that there's no... I think the legislation is number five rings that I am, if you want to click it. But it's just all the petrol heads and the people buzzing around because they've got nothing better to do than buzz around in cars. You know, I don't think that clogging up the roads with a load of petrol cars and going to EVF and all the rest of them, getting your petrol and just clogging up the roads is doing us any good. So I think that active travel is a good thing. I think that it needs to be applauded.
Okay,
which brings
all right.
me on to my second point.
Yep.
Second point about Keir Starmer, I think he sold us down the river. I think that European-wise, I think he likes Davos more than he likes the celebratory factor of Davos than he does Westminster. I think he's just a cardboard cutout. If you go to Keirpun, KER.PUN, and you have to get it on Handshake as a way of doing it, then he's got that, and you know he's running with it, and he says, well, he's the first guy who's got his links all sorted and all the rest of it. So, I mean, I don't know, I'm just a bit bemused because he just seems to, because we'll have to follow along with that, won't we, with our fishing policy?
Well, paradoxically, it might actually be good for us because we can sell our queenies a lot quicker than we used to be able to do that.
Could we?
Well, we'll find out. Anyway, thanks for calling today, and never thought we'd be talking about Keir Starmer, but here's John now with us. Hi, John.
Hi, Andy. 20-mile-an-hour speed limit.
Yeah.
As a retired driving examiner, I would like to ask the minister how you conduct a driving test when the candidate is not able to go over 20 miles an hour and get out of second gear. You then give them, if you give them a pass certificate, they can then go over the mountain at 60 and 70. Now, you know, I don't think she's ever thought of this, because after all, it is her department that run the test centre, but yeah. Obviously she doesn't talk to them.
So, presumably then, all the driving instructors are going to have to find routes where they take the learner drivers, where they can get out of second gear, so they'll be heading further out of towns.
Well, yeah, they can do that, but when they come to the driving test, they're not going to be able to do that, are they?
So who sets the driving test itinerary, the roads that they take?
Well, in my day, when I was doing it, there was no set route. The examiner could choose where they wanted to go. And so a lot of it was depended on the time of the day and the volume of traffic. So, I mean, we weren't set a route to take as such.
Yeah.
And you could choose a road that you wanted to do the turn in the road and different lanes to reverse into. Not that they reverse into lanes anymore, they just reverse around a corner.
So tell me, just for the layperson then, why, in your opinion, is this not right that they can't get out of second gear and they have to do 20 miles per hour?
Yeah, but I mean, that just doesn't give you any impression of how they handle a car, is it?
Oh, right.
I always used to say, I wish the test had been longer so I could have taken them outside the 30 and seen how they operated on the open road with no speed limit. But unfortunately, time, we were only given sort of 3/4 of an hour for each test, so you didn't really get much chance to do that.
Right, so it's the handling of the car that's the important.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, 20 mile an hour gives you no idea how a car handles and brakes or anything, does it?
Okay, so your message to the minister will be what, John?
Just how do you conduct a driving test at 20 mile an hour?
Okay. All right, appreciate it.
Just one other thing.
Okay.
We have suffered for years and years with that hideous three legs a man at the airport. We've now got an equally hideous one in Douglas. But I'll tell you one thing. I'd be interested to see how it stands up to a force 10 easterly gale.
Yes. You've got a good point there, John. Thanks for calling today.
Okay, bye now.
Thank you for that. The tree cutter, the bus that Howard talked about, was a brilliant piece of equipment, says 068. Did an excellent job. Howard's right. Doing nothing but writing reports is the way that things are done today, as always. Some common sense. Here's Jeff with us now. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Andy. Yes, I'm a visitor to the island. I live across in Berkshire, in which I live in a residential road which has a 20 miles per hour speed limit on it.
Yeah.
The reason for that is there's two schools, a primary school and a senior school. The residential road I'm living on it comes off a busy main road. Now, we suffered for many years from fast traffic coming through along the residential road, and residents complained to the local council, and the result of that was they put in a 20 mile an hour speed limit signs. Now, the local police said it would have to be self-enforcing these speed limits, so that they suggested that sleeping policemen ramps be put down with steep cambers. Right. Now, that was done by the local authority, and the result of that, traffic slowed due to the jolt they would get and the damage to their tyres. But then came along the emergency services, the ambulances, who complained that the camber slowed them down and they were statutorily required to respond to accidents in a few minutes. So then the local authority returned and adjusted the speed, the camber, so that it was more gentle for the emergency services, and that resulted in modern cars having no difficulty to take these ramps at speed. So another result, self-enforcement, sleeping policemen don't work. I suggest that the only thing that would work would be putting in things like street planters or narrowing the road to some extent. That's my humble suggestion to the minister.
And are these quite widespread in Berkshire, Jeff?
Sleeping policemen are, and they're equally not effective. The planters are, but they've resulted in the course that they have to be maintained, and then it's a bit of a game along the road of Russian roulette as to who's going to get past and where the road narrows first. So that's sort of results in a little bit of gambling basically along the roads. But it's my point, Andy, really is sleeping policemen do not work.
Right.
With modern cars, emergency services having to respond and in the time, and I think that they'd be better to go straight to something like the street planters. Cameras don't work either. They use those, but then again, they had no people in the police station to administer the pictures that they were taken. So just to keep the Isle of Man, the local authorities, which are cash-strapped, just put in some narrowing of the road, and that will probably result in reduction of speed. Anyway, that's my two bits.
Appreciate it. Thanks for calling, Jeff. Good to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
When the man in line's not on air, call Manx Radio to leave your opinion for broadcast on 682 631.
For TT 2025, Manx Radio Motorsport is on the air. Qualifying and race coverage across the fortnight. The pre-TT Classic races from Balaun, along with the latest news, weather and travel. And wherever you're listening, we've got you covered. You can listen online at motorsport.manxradio.com, or smartphone app at DAB AM 1368 and FM 87.9 in Douglas, Castletown and Ramsey. Also on 101.6 across the north of the island. Manx Radio Motorsport, the best biking station in the world, brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Look at that time. It's 5-1. We're nearly time to go, but I've got to say, Andy, drop me a note, 667. What's happened to the flagpole in Derby Square? Where's it gone? I agree with John. So, can somebody tell me, where's all the copper gone from the prom shelter that's being replaced at the moment? I was looking at that yesterday. Correct me if I'm wrong, says 807, but don't newly qualified drivers have to do less than 50 miles per hour, says Frank 807. Yes, they do. But the point that John mentioned is that it's easy. It's comparatively easy to control a car at less than 20 miles per hour. But more than that, you have to, you know, have some skill. I agree with John. The three legs at the airport is so ugly, I've always hated it. The one at the sea terminal isn't as hideous, but I think it's an ego trip. It's pointless, says 068. It's a Nigel Neal at the airport. It's a Nigel Neal. DOI's just issued new bus timetable, says Gaz. When will new timetables be issued? And how much will they cost to cater for 20-mile-per-hour bus journeys? Pauline said, this is the DOI that put us $40 million in the hole for that Liverpool landing stage, that vetoed the bus, the horse trams going the whole way of the prom. They haven't quite finished Douglas Promenade. Declared themselves not a landlord with all those houses, but forced private landlords to become subject to the law. What do we do with the DOI? That's it. Open line back tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday.
WINT.